All right, everyone. Welcome to iOS, Writing Apps Like a Boss. So this seminar is going to focus on writing apps for the iPhone and, in turn, writing apps for the iPad. And so we're basically going to walk through a couple different examples of how to make an app, a simple game like Tic-Tac-Toe, or if you're more interested in making an app like some kind of news reader or something that interacts with the internet, we'll talk about that as well. So here's our brief agenda. So iOS apps are written in a language called Objective-C. And so this is a little bit similar to C, but not really at all. So we'll be talking a little bit about the language itself, and then how to build iPhone apps using this program called Xcode, which if you haven't downloaded it yet, feel free to start the download now. It's several gigabytes. It should be free on the App Store. So you'll need to have a Mac, ideally running the latest version of OS X. If you're not, no problem. We have Macs in the Science Center available for your use with Xcode installed, and so feel free to use those for development. So if you want to make an app but don't have a Mac, don't worry. There's plenty of campus resources for that. And so then we're just going to cover two larger examples of different apps you can make. So Objective-C is technically what's called a superset of C. So that means that any C code is also valid Objective-C code. So that means that we've just kind of duct taped on some additional features to C. So some of these features include not having to ever write malloc again, thank God, no having to worry about those stupid pointers and freeing them and all that stuff you hated about C. It's just kind of gone in Objective-C. Now, Objective-C also has a much larger standard library, so there's a lot more functionality you get for free inside of Objective-C. So remember, when we were writing PHP, we noticed that we went from this kind of smallish language to the giant library of all these crazy things you can do. The same thing happens in iOS. There's objects for things like the Buddhist calendar, and really anything you can possibly think of probably exists already in Objective-C's implementation. So the objective part of Objective-C is referencing something called object-oriented programming. This is kind of a new concept, but we've actually mostly learned a lot of these concepts already. So the idea behind object-oriented programming is that you're going to structure a lot of your code around these things called classes. And these classes are really just glorified structs. So inside of a struct, we basically said, here is a thing. And this thing can have members. So for example, a node in a linked list could have other things, like a value, a pointer to the next node in the list. And together, that pointer and that value composed this one instance of a struct. So classes are very similar. Except classes can also have functions inside of them. So when we declared a struct, we could only say int n or, you know, node star next. Now with Objective-C, we can actually put functions inside of those things. So another thing that classes can do is they can inherit data from other classes. So for example, we'll be looking at a bunch of built-in Objective-C classes. One of them could be the class that represents the view for a screen. And so by saying, I want to implement my own view, we basically say someone over at Apple, probably really nice people, wrote this class for me. And it handles things like displaying buttons or rendering the screen. And we would be really pain to implement all of that functionality ourselves. And so by simply inheriting data, we can say everything that you did in that class, I also want inside of my class. And then I'm going to do some other stuff, namely implement an app. So that's what that word inheritance means. We'll see a more concrete example. And finally, the key with object-oriented programming is that it leads to data encapsulation, right? So in some of our problem sets, we could just have like these big global variables and globals everywhere, and that's how we'd keep track of state. With classes, we can start encapsulating information inside of an object. So if we have one screen in our app, we don't really need to have any data from another screen in our app inside of that. And so by kind of encapsulating things within classes, this actually leads to much better code design. And this is possible with some of the additional features of Objective-C. So, forewarning, the syntax for Objective-C is bananas. There is nothing, it is like nothing we've seen before, so it's going to be, it is a little bit of a learning curve, getting used to like, what the heck does this mean? But once you get past that initial learning curve, it's really, really smooth to start writing apps. So to declare a class, to say, here's my class, it exists, and maybe here are some things that I'm going to define later, I'm going to say at interface. And then I'm going to say at interface, I'm going to give my class a name, and then later somewhere else I'm going to say at end. And everything in between the at interface and the at end is going to be my class. So that is going to be what's inside of our .h files. So just like in C, our .h files basically said, here are some things that will exist. I'm not necessarily telling you what they do yet, but the compiler needs to know that they exist. Later, inside of our .m files, because m for Objective-C, is where we're actually going to define what these classes do. So much like our .c files, we provided an implementation for functions. Inside of our .m file, we're going to say, here is what all of the functions inside of my class, what they all do. And finally, inside of a struct, we could say, you know, inside of those curly braces int n or node star next. And in Objective-C, we're going to use the keyword app property. And this is what's going to define the properties, the non-functions, that are a part of my classes. So calling functions in Objective-C is also bananas. So when we declared functions in C, we said something like int foo and open paren, and then gave it a list of arguments. So this is what declaring methods or functions looks like in Objective-C. So if I want to declare a function or a method, where I'm saying method, a method is really just a function that's a member of a class, so kind of interchangeable, but not really. So inside of my method, I want to create a new method. It's going to return nothing, so it's going to be of type void. So this is the return type of my function. Now we have parens here, because I don't know. Next is going to be the name of my function. And then finally, we have a semicolon, just like we had in C. What's new here is this guy here. This hyphen is actually necessary. And what this says is that this method here must be called on an instance of a class. So after we declared our structs, we probably said something like, you know, struct node n, and that actually created or instantiated one of those structs so that I could actually start working with what's inside of it. So this dash means that we have to instantiate the class, just like we instantiated that struct, before we can send or call this method on it. So if I want to start adding arguments to my methods, it gets even more bananas. So here's my method name. Then I'm going to have a colon, and after this colon says, here comes some arguments. So this method takes one argument. The type of its argument is an int, and the name of that argument, or the variable that I'm going to start using inside of the method, is called I. So again, this is method, takes one argument. If you want to start adding more arguments, it gets more bananas, and that we have this colon that says, here comes my list of arguments. This first argument is an integer. Now this second argument is interesting. So the variable that I'm going to be using inside of my function is called f. So inside my function, I could say, you know, f plus equals 1 or something. This thing here is basically a key for that argument or parameter. So just like we had key value pairs in something like JSON or associative arrays, Objective-C made the decision to say, OK, just so that it's really clear when you call a method, like what all these parameters are, I'm actually going to name them all. So when you say, when you call the method, you'll actually say and float, and then you'll pass it in. So interestingly, this one is not named, but all of the other parameters are. So if I had a third argument, I could say and float, you know, and another float, and so on. So when I call these methods, it is, of course, bananas. So if I have an object, and I defined a method called foo, and I want to call it, rather than saying foo open close parens, I'm going to open a bracket. Here's the name of my method. I'm going to close a bracket, and this is the object I'm calling it on. So remember, all of these methods exist within classes, because classes can have methods defined inside of them. So here, I've arbitrarily created an object of some class. And this is just the syntax for doing that. So there are two steps to creating an object. The first step is to say, I want to allocate space. So this is the equivalent of a malloc. We don't have to say malloc anymore. We dropped the m, made it alloc, and replaced the .c with that .m. So after we alloc something, we then need to initialize it. So basically, when you create objects, you might want to have some logic that executes when they're created. So you can pass in some default values or something like that. And so this init method is what actually creates the object. So we first allocate space, just like we did in C, and then we initialize it, which may or may not do a whole lot. So then we're returning this thing into an object O. There's a star here because this is technically a pointer, but don't worry, pointers aren't that big a deal in Objective-C anymore. So now we've instantiated this class called NSObject, and this is just a random class that Apple has. So we've instantiated this, and now I have an instance of this class in this object O. So that means that if I defined these methods, I could call them like this. So similarly, if I wanted to call a method with one argument, so this is the bar method that takes one argument, and here is the baz colon quux method, so this takes two arguments. So this is calling one function on this object O. Make sense? The syntax shouldn't make sense, but you just kind of get used to it. OK, so let's talk about a few things that are built into Objective-C that weren't necessarily built into C. So in C, we kind of had to deal with strings as these stupid character arrays, and it got really annoying. Objective-C has this all built in for us. And it's built in using this class called NSString. So when I want to create an NS string, we have more arcane syntax. Rather than just saying quote CS50, we say at quote CS50. And this is just the syntax for declaring strings in Objective-C. This is extremely easy to forget, so don't. So now, once I have this, this is a string, but notice it's really just an object. Right? I just said NSString, and this is, which means I just instantiated the class called NSString, which someone else wrote for me, and they were very nice about it. And so now I can start calling methods on it. So if I call the method length on this object s, it's going to return to me the length of the string. So this is just like str len in C. So this would return 4. So similarly, another method I might want to care about is this character at index. So this is a method that says on this string s, I want you to get the zeroth character. And so this would return to me the character C. And there's a whole bunch more of these methods that you can Google really easily. Apple's documentation is great. And we'll take a look at that in a bit. So those are strings. So we also have variable size arrays built in. So remember in C, when we declared an array, we had to say you have 5 elements, end of story. When we got to JavaScript and PHP, we could start doing things like adding elements or moving elements. We can do the same in Objective-C. So rather than create an array in the normal C way, we have, again, another class called NSMutableArray. There's also NSArray. And this is going to basically encapsulate some array. So this says the first thing I want to do is I want to allocate space for a new array. And after I allocate it, I then need to initialize it. So again, just calling these two methods. So now this means that inside of this object A, I have an empty array sitting there. So if I want to add something to this array, I can call the addObject method. So I want to add an object to the array A, and I want to add the string CS50. So if I wanted to conversely remove that, I can say I want to remove the object at the first place on the array or object A. Make sense? OK, so you just kind of get used to this square bracket thing. So by the way, inside of a lot of Apple's libraries, you'll see this NS. The NS actually stands for Next Step, which is one of Steve Jobs' first companies. And that's where he really started writing a lot of the code that is kind of the basis for Mac OS X and all the other stuff. So this NS is just kind of this nice legacy shout out to one of the earlier companies back when Apple was first starting out. It's everywhere. OK, so let's take a look at a more holistic Objective-C example. So here I am inside of Xcode. So to get here, I first downloaded Xcode from the App Store, opened it up. Then I went up here to File, over here to New, and then Project. So after I do that, I have all these options of what I want to create. And so we'll take a look at these options later. But just for this example, because we're not actually going to have an app yet, I came down here. And I just said command line tool. And this says this is just an app that I could run at the command line, just like we've been running from C. So that's how I created this project. And so now I'm here. So let's first look at this file. And luckily, this should look pretty familiar, right? I have an int main. There's my friend argc, my other buddy argv. And so we can see that this is the entry point for my first Objective-C application. So here, we can ignore this for now. This is just basically some memory management stuff that you won't really ever have to worry about. So let's look at this first block here. So this first line, if I say student star Alice equals student alloc init, what's that doing? So this first student here, this is probably a class, right? So this isn't a class that Apple wrote, but it's a class that I wrote. So the first thing I want to do is I want to allocate space for a new student, and then I want to initialize it. So this gives me back this new student object. And I'm storing this in a variable called Alice. So where did that class come from? Well, over here on the left side, these are all of the different files inside of my project. We can see here I have a student.h and a student.m. So the .h file, remember, is where I declare all of the things that will exist within the class. So let's take a look at that. All right, so here we have this at interface. And this says that here comes the declarations of everything that will exist within my class. Then I have a colon. Then I have this NS object thing. So this colon signifies that inheritance bit we were discussing a little bit earlier. So this says everything an NS object can do, where NS object is just this class written by somebody else, everything this NS object can do, I want to be able to do that. So by saying colon NS object, that means that I basically inherited all of the functionality of another class. So that really just gave me a whole bunch of different methods and properties that I can use. So down here, I'm creating two properties. So that means my student, if this were a struct, these would be the two things inside of my struct. So every student has a name that is a string, and a student also has a grade, which is an int. So finally, down here, I'm just going to create a method for my student. So I called my method init with name, and it takes one argument. And that argument is a string, and I called it name. So now let's look at how we actually implemented this class. So here, now I'm inside of my .m file, m for implementation, I guess. So I have my implementation, my end, and so here is where I'm actually defining what init with name does. So I have init with name, the name of my parameter, and then this is where I'm actually creating a student. And so this is a little bit cryptic, but this is just kind of boilerplate that you want to include in your constructors. So this initialization function here, init with name, is a type of constructor. You're basically constructing a new student object and maybe sending some data inside of it. So the first thing I want to do is I want to call init on this super thing. So remember that when I said back here in the .h file that everything an NS object has, a student also has. So that means when I create a student, what I also need to do is make sure that the NS object that I'm inheriting all that data from is also initialized properly. So what I need to say is this super is actually going to refer to the parent class that I'm inheriting from. So I want to make sure I initialize everything that I'm depending on before I start trying to use it. So then, if that initialized correctly, this is just like saying if malloc did not return null, then I can start setting some properties. So in JavaScript and PHP, we had this keyword called this. And this referred to the current instance of a class. In Objective-C, we just call this self. So when I say self.name, that means that the object I just created, when I said student alloc init, that's going to give me back an object. That means I want to set the name of that object to whatever I just passed in. So just like in C, we access members with this dot. So self.name says, OK, the name of this student object is now going to be whatever you just passed in. And so finally, I can just return it, so I actually get something back. Question? OK, so this self equals super init. If you don't totally understand the inheritance stuff, don't worry. Just know that if you ever want to make your own init method, just do that, and you'll be good to go. Yeah?
What does if self mean?
So this just means when we malloc something, we always checked if it was equal to null. And if it was null, then we just kind of exited. This is just kind of the same thing. Because if this returns null, then we're probably going to segfault if we start trying to manipulate it. OK, so that's our student class. So that means we can initialize our students in one of two ways. If I just say student alloc init, I'm not using that method that I just wrote. And instead, I can simply say alice.name. And now I'm going to set that property name. So similarly, if I want to use that init with name method, I can simply say alloc. And then rather than saying init, I'm going to call that method that I just created. And I'm going to pass in Bob. So at this point, this object Bob has a name equal to Bob. OK, so down here, I'm using that NS mutable array that we looked at earlier. So I'm allocating space, then I'm initializing a new array. I'm going to add two things to it. So this array now holds student objects. So notice that nowhere did I have to say this is an array of students. I just said it's an array, period. And I can put whatever inside of it that I want. So here I have two objects. Finally, I have another object here, this TF. So over here in TF.h, basically the same thing. I'm inheriting from NS object. And by the way, when you create classes, this is all done for you, this kind of at interface boilerplate. So it has a property of students. I have a couple methods here that don't really do a whole lot. And so that means that I can, after I create this TF object, I can call this method grade on it like this. So any questions on Objective-C syntax before we start moving into some more interesting apps development stuff? OK, so let's actually make an iPhone app. So the core classes that you'll be using inside of your iPhone apps are called view controllers. And a view controller basically represents a single screen inside of your app. So if I'm on the music app, for example, one view controller could represent the view in which I view all of the songs on my iPhone. Another view controller could be when I click a song and start playing it, or as I'm drilling down into artists. Each of those different screens could be represented as a different view controller. And a view controller is really just a class that says how this screen works. So things inside of a view controller, we're going to have properties. So things like a button is going to be a property of our view controller. We're also going to have methods, and these are basically event handlers. So this method says, well, when you press this button, I want to do something. And finally, again, we're going to be using this self keyword to access the current instance. So to build interfaces in iOS is actually really, really easy. They have this nice drag and drop interface called Interface Builder. And the two core concepts that kind of wire up your Objective-C to Interface Builder are IB outlets and IB actions. So an IB outlet simply says that if you declare a property that's a button and you want to hook it up to something in your actual UI, you're going to say it's an outlet. Similarly, if you want to represent an event handler, then you're just going to say it's an action. So to actually wire up this graphical representation and your code, it's really, really simple. So if you want to attach an IB outlet, all you have to do is you control click, and we'll see an example of this really quick. You control click where it says view controller, you're going to drag into the interface. Or conversely, if you want to hook up an event handler, you're going to drag from the interface in the other direction. So let's take a look at a really simple iOS example. So let's create a new project. So I'm going to come up here to Application, and I'm going to click Single View Application. I'm going to click Next. I'll give my project a name. I'll call it Hello. Interestingly, Apple assumes you're creating a product, so that you can sell it and they can make money. So down here, I'm going to say that this is just an iPhone app. You can create an iPad app, or if you want to create one of those apps that supports both devices, you can do that too. So these are what you want your check marks to look like. You want to use storyboards, which we'll see later, and you definitely want to use automatic reference counting, which is just a nice feature that this is what prevents you from having to say Malik and Free. So unless you want to call Malik and Free, I would leave this checked. All right, so I'll click Next. And finally, this is going to ask me where I want to save it, so I'll hit Create. Okay, and here we go. So I just created a new project. Okay, so over here on the left is all the files that are inside of my project. And notice that I just got a whole bunch and I didn't even do anything. iOS is great. So for example, here, this viewcontroller.h, this is going to represent my first view controller, so the first screen inside of my app. And so now we know what this is saying. We're saying I'm calling this class viewcontroller, and a viewcontroller does everything that a UI viewcontroller does. And this, again, is just some class that Apple wrote that does a lot of handy stuff for us, like display the screen. And so here is where I can actually start defining what my view controller does. And it turns out that I really don't need any of this. This is just kind of boilerplate code that Apple gives me for free. I did need that first line, or I don't have a class. So we can get rid of that and get rid of this. OK, so this is my empty screen. So now let's click on this main storyboard.storyboard. And this is where it starts to get interesting. So this represents the first screen on my app. So if I want to add a button, in HTML, I had to create like a button tag. In Android, you have to create like a button tag. But in iOS, if I just come down here to the bottom right, and if I click on this third one here where it says objects, and I can scroll down or I can start searching for button. And oh, look, a button. So if I actually just drag and drop this right there, I've just added a button to the screen on my app. If I want to change the text, I can just double click it, say something like, something enticing like press me. So OK, so now if I run this app, so we compile it. So to run it, I just click the play button in the top left. And there's my app. I didn't do anything. And I have a sweet looking iPhone app. So if I want to stop it, you can click the stop button because it's more fun. So let's say that I want to actually something to happen when I press this button. So to do that, what I need to do is I need to create a new event handler or an action. So that means that I need to create some method that I want to be called when I press the button. So let's create a new method. So I'm inside of viewcontroller.h. I need to say that a method exists. So I need a hyphen first because I'm going to be calling this on the viewcontroller. I need to give this a type. The type of this is going to be that IB action thing that we saw earlier. So this is an event handler, so it's going to return an IB action. And this is just kind of a hint to Xcode to say that this is something I want to wire something to. I can give it a name, like button pressed, semicolon. So now I've declared a new method inside of my class. I've said this method has to exist. So now let's come into viewcontroller.m, and let's say what this method can do. So if I start typing, for example, IB action, void button pressed, Notice Xcode is really nice and it auto-completes for me. It's really wonderful. So notice here that inside of the .m file, I can also say void. And this is because that IB action isn't actually a type. It's actually just hashtag defined somewhere to be a void. And again, this is just a hint to Xcode that says, I want this to be an event handler. And we'll see why in just a sec. So when this button is pressed, I'm going to do something annoying, like display a pop-up. So to do that, I can create a new instance of this class called UIAlertView. And this is just a class that Apple wrote that's going to display annoying pop-ups. So I'll call this pop-up alert. And I have two steps, remember, to creating this object. The first thing I need to do is allocate space. So I want a UIAlertView. I want to allocate space. That's my first method. My next method is I want to initialize it. And so I have this big long method called initWithTitle, blah, 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 blah. That's basically going to control what this pop-up says. So the title of my pop-up can be hello. The message of this pop-up can be this is iOS. Delegate thing, I don't know what that is. Let's just say it's nothing. So now the button that's going to appear, I can say something like it sure is. And then I don't really want any other buttons, so let's just delete that and close the bracket. Okay, so I just created an extra one. There we go. So this is how I can create a new pop-up. Now if I want to actually show the pop-up, I want to call the show method. So to do that, I can say alert and show. And again, autocomplete was super nice. If I forgot what that was, if I just typed in S, I can kind of scroll through here to figure out what it was, and it filters nicely. Okay, so now I've just created this new alert, this new pop-up. We'll come back to what delegate means later. And now I want to say I want this method to be fired when I press the button. So I'm going to come back to my storyboard, and I want to now attach this IB action. So the first thing I'm going to do is click the button. So when I press this button, I want something to happen. I'm now going to hold down Control. I'm going to click and drag from the button to over here where it says View Controller. We can see that it kind of nicely lights up. If I let go with my mouse, I now have this pop-up over here where I have some options. One of these is the events that I can register. So these are all of those methods I declared in my H file as IB actions. This is how Xcode knows what should appear in this little list. So that's just a hint. So if I click on button pressed, I've now registered the event handler. So in JavaScript, we had to say, I have some code that registered the event handler. In Objective-C, it was really that easy. So if I run this again, now when I press the button, my event handler is going to fire, and I'm going to get this pop-up. So super, super simple there. So if you ever want to see all of the events that happen to be registered on a component, if I click on this button and I come over here to the right side, first you can see over here I can do things like change the type of the button, so if you want one of those eyes or the add contact button or whatever. So if I want to see all of the events that are on this button, if I come all the way over here to the right side, we can see here the events. I have all of these different events. So I can press the button, when I let go of the button, when I double tap or whatever. And the one I just registered is this event called touch up inside. And this says that as soon as my finger comes off the button, that event is going to fire. And that's exactly what just happened. So this is kind of the default button pressed event. Any questions so far? Okay, so that's how we can start to wire up things in our code into things inside of our interface. So remember, the first thing we had to do was define the code, and then we wired up the interface to the code. And there's our first app. Okay, so that was really cool, and we created this button. And what if we don't want to have to create a bunch of properties representing these buttons? So for example, in tic-tac-toe, I have 9 buttons. And it'd be super, super annoying to have to drag and drop 9 times, or if I had to make tic-tac-toe with like 81 instead of 9, I'd have to drag and drop 81 times, and that's lame. So what we can do instead is, much like in HTML, when we had things like IDs and names, and we can kind of search for things by their ID, there's a similar notion in iOS called tags. So a tag is simply a unique numerical identifier for a component. So if I say this has a tag of 0, for example, if I create a button, give it a tag of 0, and we'll see how to do that in just a second. If I want to get that button, I can simply say I want to call the viewWithTag method on the object over here, the self.view, which represents the current screen, for example. If I call that viewWithTag method, I'm going to pull back the button with tag 0. So let's take a look at this by building tic-tac-toe. So first, this is my storyboard. So I've created these 9, or 10 really, 10 UI buttons. Notice they're all the same size. So if I click one of these, and I come back over here in this right side, you'll see I adjusted the font right here, so I made the font a little bit bigger. But what I also did was I set this tag. So I said that this has a tag of 1, and that's the top left. Now if I click another button, like this second one here, now you'll see that my tag is 2. So each of these buttons just has a unique tag. And so this is later how I'm going to start interacting with my app. So this is all inside of one view controller, but here's what we have. So we have 3 properties here. So this first one and this last one are just going to represent the state of my board. So basically this first one is an array representing where the X's and O's are. This other one here tells us whose turn it is. So notice that I also have these things here. So before, when we declared properties, we just kind of gave them a name and a type. We can also give them some additional information here. So what this first one says is non-atomic. And what this says is that basically only one thing will ever be trying to access this variable at a time. So you can do more complex applications that are multi-threaded. And there's basically, so back in Scratch, you know, we had different threads and different sprites could be doing different things at the same time. If that's not the case, which it is not in anything that we'll be looking at, if we just say non-atomic, it's actually just going to make things a little bit faster. We also have this thing called assign, strong or weak. This assign just says that this is a standard type. This is not an object or a pointer, because this is just a bool. So bool is built into Objective-C. So this just says that don't try to do anything fancy with pointers here. It's just a regular old scalar. So strong and weak. This weak says that actually I want this to be pointing to something in the view controller. I'm not going to actually allocate or init this myself. The interface builder, when I run the app, is going to handle all that initialization. So if I say weak, that says someone else is going to be creating this. If I say strong, this says that I'm going to be the one that's creating this board object. And so here I just have some more methods here. For example, an action for when the new game button is pressed, an action for when any of the other buttons are pressed, and et cetera. So we won't get into too much of the logic of tic-tac-toe, although it's very exciting. But let's take a look at some of the things that we can do inside of iOS. So this new game method is going to be fired whenever I press the new game button. So to hook that up, I simply came over to my storyboard. I clicked on new game. If I come over here to the right, I can see that touchup inside is wired to the new game method. So that's why this is going to get fired. So the new game method is just going to do some setup. So it's going to say, I want you to clear the state of the board. So this is just a nice method on mutable arrays. This is going to say it's now X's turn. And now I'm going to take advantage of this view with tag thing. So I know that my buttons have the tags 1 through 9. That's just something I arbitrarily picked. So if I want to set the text of each button to be empty, because I just started a new game and I don't want any X's or O's to be left over, I can do this. So I can say, I want the view with the tag 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. So this will pull a different button each time. So here I'm going to cast it to UI button. So just like we could cast ints to floats and vice versa, this says that I want to cast this to a UI button. That means the type of this will be a UI button star, because pointers, but don't worry, they're not scary anymore. So once I have this button, I'm going to call a method on it. So this method is called setTitleForState. And so this says I want to set the text of the button to be the empty string, and I want it to be the empty string when it's not pressed. So I can actually change, if I'm using this method, I could, you know, change the text of the button as soon as someone hits it. But we just want to say, you know, when the button's just sitting there, I want the text to be blank. So finally, you know, we're just going to initialize my board. I'm going to say that everything is currently a 0. So this board member is a mutable array, which means I can call the add object method and just put a 0 inside of it. So that's what happens when I create a new game. So let's just take a look at another one. So this method here is the IB action that's going to be pressed every time one of those squares is pressed. So, you know, we have some tic-tac-toe logic here. You know, we figure out whose turn it is, and based on that, we either set an X or an O. But you notice that we're reusing this same event handler for every single one of those buttons. So that means that I don't have, you know, a method for the top left button, a different method for the bottom right button, although I could have done that. That wouldn't really be good design. So what I'm doing here is I'm actually going to determine what the tag of the button that was pressed is. So you notice that this play method takes one argument. It's called sender. And what sender is sender is going to represent exactly what was taken action upon. So if I press a button, this sender is going to be that UI button that I actually pressed. So that means that that UI button has a tag, because I created a tag. So if I want to get at the tag, I can simply say, I want the tag of the sender. And again, I've just casted it to a UI button, so I know that I happen to know that this sender will be a UI button. Doesn't always have to be a UI button. I could, for example, register the same event handler for one for a button, one for a slider. In this case, I know they're all buttons, so I'm going to say, I want this to be a button. Then I can get the tag, and from the tag, I now know where I am inside of the board. So then I can simply set either the X or the O, can flip the turn, check who's won, etc. So any questions on this so far? OK, so all the code we posted online, I don't want to get into too much of the tic-tac-toe logic, but now you can see that really, you know, all we're doing is we're looping over this array. So, you know, we have a couple of for loops here, and we're just comparing to see, you know, do we have a match in all the rows, a match in a column, or anything like that. So now actually run this app, if I tap on one of these buttons, that play method was fired. So that means I just set the button to be an X, so now this button will be an O, and so on. And so that's how we're starting to interact with this single page app. So we'll post the code, so feel free to peruse that. But let's now talk about some apps that are more than just one page. As exciting as tic-tac-toe was, a lot of apps inside of iOS are kind of these drill down things with multiple screens. So the first concept that we'll need to talk about are protocols. And a protocol is simply a set of methods that you can promise to define. So if I create this new protocol with two methods, we know this first one, if the return type is void, I call it foo, it takes no arguments. I have another method, it returns an int, I call it bar, and it takes one argument. So all this protocol is, that's called some protocol up here, this is just a set of things that someone can implement. So I haven't inside of this protocol said what foo does. Instead I'm just saying, well, you could define foo if you want to. So if I'm creating a view controller or creating a class, I can, inside of that class, promise to implement some of these methods. So for example, if I say this arrow some less than some protocol greater than, this now says I'm making a promise to you that inside of this view controller class, I will have definitions for both foo and bar. So why is that useful? So a lot of components inside of iOS take advantage of this design pattern called delegation. What delegation says is that, for example, if I have a text box, and there are some, you know, events that could be registered inside of my text box, rather than creating separate events, what I can do is I can say the delegate of this text box will be some object. When I say that this is a delegate now, that means that whenever some event would have been fired in the text box, rather than having to register it or anything like that, it's just going to call a method on the delegate. So for example, inside of my text box, I have a method for when I press that done button in the bottom right. And so rather than registering an event handler, what I can say is, text box, here is an object that I want you to send, call a method on every time someone presses the done button. And that means that that object has to implement some protocol that says, I promise to define that done button action. Right? Because if it doesn't define that method and you press done, then it's going to be confusing. So let's take a look at an example. So here I simply have one text box. And one of the properties of this text box over here on this right side is the delegate. So this is just a property of the class. What I did here is I control clicked and I dragged from this spot over here to the view controller. And that says now the delegate of this text box is going to be the view controller. So that means that when some actions happen, rather than registering separate event handlers, I just want you to send them to the delegate. So now let's take a look at my view controller. So inside of the .h file, I've made a promise. I've promised to implement some methods inside of this protocol called UI text field delegate. And again, this is just some list of some things that I can choose to implement. So if I come here in my .m file, I have implemented one such method. So I've called it text field should return, because that's what it was called inside of the protocol. And now, whenever I press the done button inside of that text field, this is what's going to get called. So I did not register an event handler. I connected the delegate. And whenever this event is fired, this is the method that'll get called. So if I come over here to my storyboard and run it, while that's loading, we can see what this does. So on my screen, I have two things. I have this text field and I have this label. So I'm simply saying I want the text of this label to be equal to whatever the user typed in inside of the text field. This next line here is simply a method that I'm calling on the text field that says I want you to hide the keyboard. This is just the arbitrary method that Apple chose. So again, before I did anything, I had to wire everything up. So I first came over here from the view controller. I dragged over to the text box. I let go. And I can see here that I can make this the text field property, since over here in the view controller, I've defined a property that is an IB outlet of a text field. So this says that I can wire this property up to a text field in my UI. So now when I click this, I can start typing. Now if I click the Done button, this is going to fire an event that I can now respond to. So no event handlers, that's how I just responded to that Done button. So it makes sense? So this isn't a design paradigm that you might not ever find yourself, creating your own protocol, but just know that some different iOS components register events in different ways. So buttons, for example, use those IB actions. Text fields, on the other hand, are going to use delegates. We can see, and you can look all of that up inside of the documentation. So by the way, there's actually a ton of UI stuff built into iOS for you. So for example, if I wanted to make that say, the way I made that say done in the bottom right, is I selected this text field, I came over here, I scrolled down a bit to return key, and I can actually make this a whole bunch of things. Like if I want that to say emergency call instead, I can do that, which is just totally random. And I don't know why there's a built-in emergency call button, but there it says emergency call in really small letters. So there you go. Definitely explore all of these different options in iOS. So any questions on delegates? Again, just an interesting design pattern that you should be aware of. OK, so let's next take a look at table views. So a table view is basically that list of items that is all over the place in iOS. So when you're looking, flipping through all of your contacts, you're looking at the setting page, that kind of list of things is called a table view. And implementing a table view in iOS is pretty simple. Instead of making a class that descends from that UI view controller like we've done before, we simply need to say, rather than everything a UI view controller does, I want to do, I say everything a UI table view controller does, I want to do. So that simply just adds some additional things that are totally done for us. We just need to do very little to basically fill in the blanks inside of the table. So in order to display a table, I need to answer some questions. First question I need to answer is, how many sections are in the table? So when you're flipping through your contacts app, you'll notice that it's kind of organized by the A's, then you have the B's, you have that little subheader. So each of those is called a section. You may or may not need these. So the first thing you need to do is implement a method called tableView number of sections in tableView that simply returns how many sections you have. So this could just say return one if you just have one big tableView. The next question that iOS needs to know is, how many rows do you have? So for example, you're flipping through a tableView, you have a fixed number of songs you're looking at or a fixed number of contacts. If you're me, of course, not that many. And so that's how iOS knows how many cells to display. So again, this could just say something like return three. My tableView has three rows. Finally, iOS needs to know what each cell looks like. So what it's actually going to do is call this method down here, this tableView cell for row at index path. It's going to call this method on every single cell inside of your table. How does it know how many times to call it? Well, you told it inside of number of rows in section. So we're going to call this on each of our cells. And inside of this is where you can actually do things like set the text or tell you what that little blue button on the right side does. So the pattern for getting these cells, we're going to use this method called DQ reusable cell with identifier. So Objective-C is actually very well known for these ridiculous length of their method names. And this is really a nice case in point example. So what this method does is this just says, I want you to give me a cell. So just an iOS thing, if you have something like 100,000 songs on your iPod, what iOS doesn't want to do is allocate 100,000 cells, right? Because if you're at the top of your list, do you really need to allocate memory for the cell that's like 99,000 rows down? No, because as you're scrolling, you can kind of allocate as you go along. So this is done for you. You don't have to worry about all that stupid performance stuff. All you say is you call this method dq reusable cell with identifier, and this says, okay, if you need to, I'm going to create a new cell for you. But if you're at the bottom of the table and you've already allocated some cells at the top of the table that you're really not going to need anytime soon, I'm just going to give you one of those back instead of allocating a new one. And so this is just a nice performance concern, and you do not have to allocate the cells yourself. So that's going to give you back a cell. It's going to return to you a cell object. Once you have the cell object, you can do stuff to it. So you can set the text of the cell with this property called textLabel. You can add that arrow in the right or some other random stuff with this other property called accessoryType, and so on and so on and so on. So let's take a look at actually implementing a table view now. So when I created this project, rather than saying single view application, I actually came over here to master detail application. And so basically this corresponds to kind of the mail app on the iPad with the table view on the left and then the contents on the right. On the iPod or iPhone, this is just going to correspond to a single table view. So that's where I got my started code. So let's first take a look at the storyboard. So all of this was done for me, basically created this navigation bar. It showed me what an example cell could look like. I can double click this, change the title. You know, any other UI concerns I can handle there. So the header file looks really simple. So rather than saying this is a UI view controller, I'm now saying this is a table view controller. So we know that we want to call all those table methods. So next, I just want to create a property that's going to represent the things inside of my table. So this table is going to arbitrarily display a list of fruit. And so I need to create some array in which I can insert fruit. So inside of my implementation file, first thing I want to do is I want to make sure I initialize this array. So I said alloc init created my fruit array, and I'm adding four things to it, one of which is much more controversial than the other three. And so now I have an array of size 4, right? We're shaking it up in CS50. So I now have an array of size 4. So now I'm going to start answering these questions. And actually, you know, when I created this app, all of this was already done for me. I didn't have to like type out number of sections in table view. It was already there, and I'm just kind of filling in the blanks. So how many sections do I have? One. All done. How many rows do I have? Well, I have one row for every fruit. So this count is just a property of any array that says, how big is it? So that's how many rows I have. So finally, I just need to say, what does each cell look like? So I'm going to say dq reusable cell with identifier. Again, this was already written for me. I didn't have to do this myself. And I want to get back this cell at this location. So you remember that we're calling this same method on every single cell. And this argument here, this index path argument, says what row am I in. So if I say index path dot row down here, this will be 0, then it will be 1, then it will be 2. And this is just so I know what cell I'm currently displaying. So I just want to set the text of the cell using this text label property to be the go inside my fruit array and get the object corresponding to each row. So if this is just a string, I'm now just setting the text property to a string. Woohoo! So I can do one other thing. I can also register an event handler on each of the cells. So when I tap each of these cells, this did select row at index path, this is going to be called for me. So simply by defining this, I can now handle what happens when you tap a cell. And again, we're passing in which cell was tapped so that we can reuse this same event handler for all of our cells. Again, this is just something iOS is doing for me. So let's display another annoying pop-up that simply says you picked something where that something is going to be the rowth, the rowth object. So when I run this, I'm going to have this nice table view with one row for each of these fruit. And if I tap one, it tells me what happened. Make sense? All right. So let's build a little bit more complex of an app, as much as clicking you picked tomato is. So using the nice part about this storyboarding is it's not only going to help us design each screen individually, it's also going to help us tie together our entire app. So the final app we'll be building is this nice sports news reader. And so it's going to have multiple screens. And so I can actually represent each of these multiple screens on the same storyboard. And I can kind of zoom out and see my app from a high level. So in order to create a new element inside of my storyboard, it's really simple inside of Interface Builder. So if I wanted to add another screen to this, for example, I can first zoom out with the pinch zoom that Apple loves so much. And down here, you know, before I search for a button and I drag and drop a button. If I want to create a new screen, I can actually just drag and drop an entire view controller. So if I pick this, pull it over here, hey, there's another screen. And so now, using the same storyboard file, I can have all of the screens inside of my app, and I can kind of zoom out and see how they interact. So these won't interact. Yep. So the way in which these two screens interact is you define relationships. So you can basically say, this screen, when you press this button, I want you to slide over to this new screen. So that means there's this kind of relationship between the first screen and the second screen. So you'll have basically an arrow from that button to the second screen, saying that when you press this button, that's where I want to go. So just like we control clicked and dragged to define those outlets, we're going to do the same thing to define these segues. So we'll see an example for that. And before that we actually transition from one screen to another, iOS is nice enough to call this method called prepare for segue. And this is where we can start sending data from one app to another. So in the example we're about to look at, we're going to basically allow us to filter baseball teams by leagues and divisions. So when I select a league, for example, I want to transition to my next screen, where I can display all of the divisions in that league or all the different teams. And I need to send to that screen what teams you should display. So to do that, I'm going to take advantage of this method here. So finally, just a random point on iOS. If you want to store data, there's this thing called core data, which is actually kind of complicated to work with. You can also basically use SQL to store data, which again is nice, but kind of on the more complicated side to work with. But iOS also supports these really cool things called property lists. And a property list is basically just a file that represents key value pairs. So you define a list of keys, and you say this key is going to be an array, this key is going to be a string. And basically, anything you can do in JSON, you can do inside of a property list. And so this is just really nicely allows us to work with some data. So for example, I have this teams.plist that I created. So I just created a new plist file, and I can kind of drill down. So this is a dictionary, this is a dictionary, these are strings. And so this is just kind of a nice graphical representation of a JSON document, or just a set of key value pairs. And so this is the data that I'll be working with inside of my app. Whoa. So let's first come over here. We have a lot more files now, but let's first come over here to the storyboard. So the storyboard here, if I can zoom out, we can now see that this is kind of the flow of my app. I'm first going to start on this screen. I'm going to drill down to this screen. I'm going to drill down to this screen. And we can see here that if I kind of move one of these around, we have these arrows going from here to here. And the way I define that arrow was if I zoom in a little bit, if I come over to this view controller, and here's a cell. And I want to say that when you tap a cell, I want you to slide over to another screen. So I can simply hold down Control, scroll over a little bit, hold down Control, drag this cell over, and let go. And over here we say, what's the transition that you want to use? Do you want to use that slidey thing? That's called push. Do you want to slide up from the bottom? That's called mobile, modal. And once I click one of these, it's going to draw this arrow for me. And that means that I've actually just handled, you know, what happens when I press this button, just graphically. I didn't write any code to actually slide from one screen to the next one. I just defined this visually inside of Interface Builder. So if I click on this arrow, we can see that I gave this thing a name. I just called it Show Divisions, and this is just so that I can know what transition is about to occur, and we'll see why in just a sec. So that's how I've kind of wired up the different screens in my app. If this were a button, for example, rather than a table view, I could control click on the button, drag over to the next screen, and that's how I can do navigation that way. So really quickly, if we come into the master view controller, again, we're simply just going to define a list of things that will be displayed in the table view. Here I'm saying I want you to take that plist file and I want you to load it up into a dictionary. Once you have that dictionary, I'm just going to answer those same questions again. Here's number of sections, one. There's one row for every league, and the text of each cell should be either the first one, the first league, the second league, and so on. So finally, I'm going to use this method that we just saw called prepare for segue. And this is the method that's going to be fired when I click on one of those rows, and therefore activating that transition that I set up with the arrows. So this is saying that I can have multiple relationships from one screen to another, right? If I have two buttons and each button takes you to a different screen, I'm going to have two segues, one for each button. But this prepare for segue is, again, going to be reused for each of the different relationships. So that means that I need a way of identifying if you press the first button or you press the second button. So remember when I gave that segue a name, this show divisions, that's how I now know that this is the segue that was activated. So all I want to do is I want to say, okay, I want to figure out what I just hit. And so to get that, I can say I want the index path for the selected row. Remember, the index path just says where I just clicked. And then I want to say I want to figure out where I'm going. So this destination view controller, that's a property of the segue. That's the screen I'm going to. So I know that the screen I'm going to is called divisions view controller because I created that class. And so now, if I say d.divisions, I'm now setting a property of the view controller I'm about to go to. So this is how I'm sending data from one screen to another screen. So just looking at this divisions view controller, you can see here that in the .h file, there's that property divisions, and that's what I'm basically populating. So that's how I know that I'm displaying the divisions corresponding to the league that I clicked. And again, the actual table view looks pretty much the same, just answering those three simple questions, as well as identifying what happens when you move to the next screen. So just a couple of other things here. So you notice up the top here that rather than saying hashtag include, I'm now saying hashtag import. This is just an Objective-C thing. This is the import is basically just a nicer version of include. And for example, we need to know what this class is. So I can't just say divisions view controller, right? If we didn't import, if we didn't hashtag standardio.c inside of our .c file, the compiler had no idea what printf was. So similarly, if I don't import the divisions view controller, the compiler really has no idea what a divisions view controller is. So just make sure that inside of your different .m files, you make sure to import the corresponding .h files, just so that the compiler knows what's going on. And so finally, this app will ultimately do is display some data using a web view. And so a web view is just an object in which you can kind of embed a little web browser inside of your app. So all you need to do is supply a URL to your web browser. So I want to go to mlb.mlb.com, and this is just how I can access the home page for each team. And so by passing it in this URL, the web view can just display this for me, and I can browse around, and simulators in use by that one. So now this came from my plist. If I click this, this also came from my plist, and this sliding was handled by defining those segues. I click this, and one more, and now here is my UI web view. So just like that, here's the website for the URL that I just embedded, and I didn't have to handle anything crazy. This is just how to display a web page. So things like this back button here are also given to me totally for free because I've defined these relationships using segues. So any questions? Yeah?
When you use alloc, you never have to free anything?
Exactly. So when you call alloc in init, you do not have to free it. iOS is going to handle all of that for you. It's wonderful, and you're not breaking any rules. Yeah?
If you were to include more teams that could fit on the screen, would it automatically have a scroll option, or is that something you need to add?
Nope, exactly. If I had more teams, for example, it would automatically handle the scrolling for me. And all the performance concerns with a huge table are also handled totally for me. Other questions? So all of this code is going to be posted. We kind of glossed over a little bit of the more minor details. But things like setting some properties of the web view are just things that you can get by browsing Apple's documentation, which is really, really, really nicely laid out. They have a lot of sample apps and example usages of different APIs. So definitely peruse those if you can. So just some helpful links you might want to take a look at. These are some handy documentation guides. The URLs are massive, so they're shortened. So this first one is kind of the entire library of documentation. There's a little search bar, so if you start typing button, it'll start giving you all the information about all the things you can do with a button. I've also included the table view programming guide, So it handles table views in much more detail, how to do things like dynamically add cells or edit cells or remove them. There's lots of sample apps from Apple that show you how to do that. And finally, this last one is the human interface guidelines. And so this is basically some discussion of UI components, you know, things like don't make a button that's 4 pixels by 4 pixels, that's a bad idea, and other things that Apple wants you to do to encourage good design. So any last questions before we finish up? All right, so definitely, you know, feel free to, we're going to have special labels on Discuss. You know, we'll have an iOS one, and so definitely feel free to utilize that if you want, you know, you're want to work with your classmates on projects or help figure out some random iOS stuff. You know, feel free to email me, and definitely peruse all the code online, because, you know, just in the interest of time, we kind of glossed over the more finer-grained details of things. But if not, then good luck on your iOS projects, and I hope we have a big influx of apps in the App Store.